Welcome to this week's episode of the Agribiz Show on the Mighty 790 and 104.7 KFGO. I'm your host, Rusty Halverson. Madison Quinn and I hopped on the road to check out the Youth Farm Safety Camp that NDSU was hosting this past week for farm machinery operation, handling livestock, first aid on the farm, and many other topics, too. We talked with Angie Johnson, NDSU Extension Farm and Ranch Safety Coordinator.
We've got youth that are ages 13 to 16 years old. And so the whole purpose of this program is we're actually a certification program. Not a lot of people know about the federal law that actually requires 14 and 15-year-old youth to go through a certification training in operating tractors greater than 20 horsepower if you are going to be employed on a farm operation other than your own family's. And so the goal of this program, we work to achieve that certification. So that means they have to take driving exams as well as a paper pencil type exam in order to achieve a certain percentile that we understand that they know what they're doing, how, their competencies, how they're behaving and working around equipment, livestock, and first aid as well.
You know, it's not just about operating the machinery safely or being around livestock safely. It's also about, if there is an accident, first aid is an important component of the farm safety camp too.
Absolutely. So we strive really hard. We had a lot of awesome sponsorships this year that every kid is actually going to go home with a farm first aid kit that contains a splint and a tourniquet. So those are two necessary items that aren't always, when you buy a first aid kit from a Walmart or a store or whatever, they usually don't come with those features. And so our camp not only builds first aid kits, those kids get their hands on them, they also get one-on-one attention as to how to use them in an emergency. It's one thing to be handed a kit, it's another thing to be taught how to use it in a time of crisis.
Okay, Angie. The last question I had for you, and anything else you'll want to add, but you know, in the job market today, there is such demand for help, not only at the restaurant or the hardware store, especially on the farm too. Will these students, if they're not going home to their family farm, do you think there's a lot of summer jobs waiting for them out there?
Oh, absolutely. After going through a training like we offer, you know, we're developing a mindset around safety. So safety is a transferable skill, no matter if you become a plumber or if you be even a doctor or in the healthcare. Safety is priority number one for yourself and for those that you are working with and serving. And so the skills today, tonight, we're going to be covering lockout, tagout. Most industries utilize lockout, tagout, whether it's a superstore or at the grain elevator, you utilize lockout, tagout. So it's not just within production agriculture. These skills are transferable to no matter what career choice a child chooses.
One of the students we talked with shared his story involving a UTV crash last year. Check out the video on KFGO's Facebook page or at KFGO.com. The first camp of the summer took place last week on the campus of Williston State College. This week's camp, of course, at NDSU and Bismarck State College will host a safety camp June 26th through the 28th. The North Dakota Soybean Council is updating its logo. Established in 1985, the council has been a leading source of soybean research, market development, promotion, and education. Since then, the industry has been evolving. Soybean Council Chairman Chris Brozart of Wolford says the construction of two soybean crushing plants in North Dakota is going to open even more avenues for soybean farmers to provide food, feed, and fuel to the world. Those changes have inspired the council to update its logo to reflect the future of North Dakota's soybean industry. I talked with Chris earlier this week about how the planting season has been going in his neck of the woods near Wolford.
You bet, yeah. You know, currently on our farm, we actually finished up actually soybeans and canola here on late on Saturday. So we're working on finishing up rolling the beans and just trying to get our pre-emerge chemical down for our soybeans here. So that's, you know, the last week's been a little rough with the wind, but we'll try to get across them the best we can. Things are popping up fast here if you're able to get them into moisture. We'd really like to see a rain just to kind of even everything out here. It's kind of missed everything here yet this spring. So But wheat's coming up nice. Barley's coming up nice. Things overall look pretty good. Like I said, there's a few dry spots out in the field, but overall, we can't complain too much.
That is Chris Brozar, chairman of the North Dakota Soybean Council. The United Soybean Board is funding research to help farmers manage weeds now and prepare for the future. United Soybean Board farmer leader Shannon Tigner Ellis says the checkoff has invested in weed management for decades, but is now focused on herbicide-resistant weeds.
And one of the major suggestions for suppression options is cover crops. And the checkoff has partnered with the National Corn Growers Association and the National Pork Board to launch the Farmers for Soil Health Initiative. And a major goal is to increase the number of cover crop acres on corn and soybean fields to 30 million acres by the year 2030.
That is Shannon Tigner Ellis with the United Soybean Board. A new proposal from the Bureau of Land Management is raising alarm bells for public land users. The Bureau's recent conservation proposal could be a major shift in public land management. Shelby Hagenauer, American Farm Bureau Senior Government Affairs Director, says the proposal could change the way farmers and ranchers operate in the western U.S.
There are several things they're proposing. The first one, and probably the most significant, is elevating conservation as a use under the Federal Land Policy and Management Act of 1976. They're proposing to create a new kind of lease on BLM lands, a conservation lease. They're prioritizing the designation and protection of areas of critical environmental concern. And these are areas that have special management attention, and they could include simply closing down areas entirely from public use.
Hagenauer says the proposal was developed with no stakeholder input or advanced notification.
These are really complicated issues and conversations that should be facilitated by the agency with the involvement of all stakeholders, folks interested in grazing, the energy industry, recreationalists. They should have these conversations over years to develop really solid, durable solutions. Right now, public input is confined to a 75-day public comment period. And further, the public meetings they're holding have left stakeholders of all kinds with more questions than answers.
She encourages Farm Bureau members to contact their lawmakers regarding the BLM issue.
Work with your state Farm Bureau. Provide comments about the benefits your work has on the land. You can contact members of Congress and senators to tell them what this impact may be to your ranch. Ask them to support an extension of the comment period. And finally, there's legislation that would require the BLM director to withdraw the proposal so that they could go back to the drawing board and work collaboratively with all of these interests in a true multiple use spirit.
That is Shelby Hagenauer, American Farm Bureau Senior Government Affairs Director. We'll have more on this week's episode of the AgriBiz Show coming up in just a moment on the Mighty 790 and 104.7 KFGO. Welcome back to this week's episode of the AgriBiz Show on the Mighty 790 and 104.7 KFGO. The House Transportation and Infrastructure Committee recently considered several supply chain-related bills. H.R. 3372, introduced by Congressman Dusty Johnson of South Dakota, would establish a voluntary pilot program for states to increase truck weights on federal interstates up to 91,000 pounds on six axles. Mike Steenhook, executive director of the Soy Transportation Coalition, says the bill is a common sense solution to many challenges.
Well, there's been an effort for a considerable period of time to increase the efficiency of truck transportation, and a number of states have actually done so. They allow trucks that are heavier in weight with additional axles to operate on state and local system. But it's always been a challenge to get that instituted at the federal level on the interstate system. The opponents of it, you know, it's easy to have more of a knee-jerk reaction to this and just make an assumption that if you have a heavier truck, that must mean a more dangerous system. And that's actually not the case when you have an additional axle.
Steenhook says an extra axle on trucks transporting goods would be better for the interstate system.
you displace the weight so that the actual imprint on the road is actually less than a 5-axle 80,000 pound semi. And it also is actually safer because you all of a sudden added an additional set of brakes so that the stopping distance will be actually less. So there's a real good message to tell on this. It is a common sense solution, but there historically have been some challenges in getting it instituted.
The legislation would also address some of the challenges the supply chain has battled since COVID-19.
We have a truck driver shortage. We have a desire to decrease costs. We want to decrease emissions. We want to transport more. And what we found is that by adding that additional axle and then you add additional weight, you're able to really increase efficiency and cost savings for agriculture and other utilizers of the system, but you're also actually increasing motorist safety. And the main way in which you achieve that is you're taking a given amount of freight and you're apportioning that over fewer semi-trucks.
And Steenhoek says simple math shows the advantage of the extra axle and weight for transportation to and from grain elevators.
Elevator that has to restrict itself to an 80,000 pound 5-axle semi, they will have 838 additional semi trips in a given year. So 838 additional times in which a semi is leaving that facility, returning to that facility. And clearly that scenario is going to present more danger than having those 838 trips never materialize in the first place.
The bill is headed to the full House for consideration. A companion bill is expected to be introduced in the Senate. Former Minnesota Congressman Colin Peterson was a keynote speaker at the recent U.S. Meat Export Federation Spring Conference in Minneapolis. He thinks negotiators could reach an agreement on a new farm bill before the current legislation expires at the end of September, but a short-term extension may be necessary.
September 30th is not a drop-dead date. Nothing actually happens that day that's going to cause any significant problems.
Peterson says a 1 or 2 year extension of the current farm bill could have different impacts for different regions of the country.
It depends on where you're from. One of the things people are focused on is these reference prices. Well, the 10% reference price increase is $20 billion. I think corn goes to $4 or something, and soybeans goes to $9 and something. So they're not going to trigger. We spend $20 billion, and for us in the Midwest, we get nothing out of it for the first 2 or 3 years, according to the projections. In the South, that's different. So rice has got a significant problem. We raised their reference price last time to $14.50, and now they say they need $16 to break even. But rice is a small crop, so we can do that. Peanuts is a small crop. We can do that. Cotton, they don't have as big a problem, but they want in on the deal. They're expensive. So that whole reference price issue, I just think in terms of the overall situation, it's a lot of money for not that much good. In the Midwest, that money would be better spent on crop insurance.
One big question remains, where the funding is going to come from for the increased costs in the new farm bill, which is expected to top $1 trillion.
I don't see anything being successful in terms of trying to cut existing programs, especially that are under mandatory spending. I don't think that's going to happen. So I've been trying to support this idea that they're going to get additional money. I just don't know where it's going to come from. Say they cut some area outside of agriculture. There's so many other people that want money. I think it's hard to believe that they're going to cut money in some other area and transfer it to agriculture without somebody else complaining.
Peterson says there's another unknown, a lot of new faces on the Ag Committee that have never voted on a farm bill before.
Maybe that's a good thing. They haven't voted against it. There's just a lot of education that needs to be done. I mean, we have in the House on the Democratic side, you've got 11 freshmen that are on the committee. Obviously, they have never been involved in this. Half of them don't have a whole lot of agriculture in their district. So there's just a lot of education that needs to be done. And frankly, on the Republican side, back in the old days, they had very strong ties to agriculture on the Republican side. That's not the case so much. Even on their side, they don't have solid ag background as they used to. So it's a different world.
The U.S. Meat Export Federation had record attendance at its spring conference in Minneapolis. Dan Holstrom, president and CEO of USMEF, says the red meat industry has a lot to celebrate.
Well, you need to start with pork, without a doubt. Pork export business through the first quarter is up dramatically, up 14, 15%. It's broad-based growth. I mean, it's not just one market. The star is Mexico and a lot of the Latin American countries, but you have other markets, some of the smaller regions that are really contributing, Taiwan, Philippines, Vietnam, Australia. So it's really encouraging to see some of these markets coming back. And it's no coincidence. I mean, we're working in these markets all the time. But one of our major competitors in the global marketplace, Europe, their production is down over 10% the last 2 years, and prices are significantly higher. So that's a significant shift in the landscape globally. The U.S. industry is starting to capitalize.
He says strong overseas demand for American meat products has been supportive to prices.
Yeah, demand on beef and pork is, considering the higher prices on beef, is hanging in there very well. And on the pork side, we wish we could force some of those prices even higher, because I think the demand is there globally. We had the third largest year ever on pork last year. We had a record on beef. And that's with a lot of the Asian markets being hamstrung. Food service is still not back to normal. We call it 60, 70% of normal in a lot of these Asian countries. So there's a tailwind there later in 2023 on both pork and beef.
That's going to do it for this week's episode of the Agribiz Show. I've been your host, Rusty Halverson, on the Mighty 790 and 104.7 KFGO.